Good morning. The reading is from 2 Timothy chapter 3, starting at verse 1. But mark this, there will be terrible times in the last days. People will be lovers of themselves, lovers of money, boastful, proud, abusive, disobedient to their parents, ungrateful, unholy, without love, unforgiving, slanderous, without self-control, brutal, not lovers of the good, treacherous, rash, conceited, lovers of pleasure rather than lovers of God, having a form of godliness but denying its power, have nothing to do with them. They are the kind who worm their way into homes and gain control over weak-willed women who are loaded down with sins and are swayed by all kinds of evil desires, always learning but never able to acknowledge the truth. Just as Jannes and Jambres opposed Moses, so also these men oppose the truth, men of depraved minds who, as far as the faith is concerned, are rejected. But they will not get very far because, as in the case of those men, their folly will be clear to everyone.
For the benefit of any visitors with us this morning, welcome. And to simply say that we're working through a series from Paul's letter to Timothy, the second letter, which is recorded to be the last words that the Apostle Paul gave for us in the New Testament, because he was obviously facing his own execution under house arrest in Rome. And I felt that, given the present circumstances, it would be good to hear something from the priorities of Paul, those things which he clearly, from his heart, wanted to share with Timothy, but really we know that it moves right across the board of the Christian church and has been of help to people right over the 2,000 years. So we look together at this. I don't know about you, but when I listen to that reading and I listen to those various different expressions of human behaviour, I'm thinking to myself, this was 2,000 years ago, and yet it seems to fix itself fully on what we all see today. And I don't think you could ever hope to read that passage and not think this is what we experience today. So I thought this morning I could address the issue recognizing and responding to challenging times. Recognizing and responding to challenging times. Paul would say they're challenging times, but he would also use the phrase the last days. And of course, we'll look at that in a moment because his very first verse of chapter 3, he mentions the last days. Well, we do live in challenging days, there's no question about it. I mean, mind you, some people think something is challenging and others just take it in their stride. I remember speaking to a particular lady who said, when I first got married when I was young, my husband made me feel like Wonder Woman. And no doubt she was thinking of the superhero that has appeared both on television and in film. Yes, I felt like Wonder Woman. I'm still Wonder Woman, she says. I wonder where I left my keys. I wonder where I put my purse. I wonder where my money went. Sometimes you can see people and it looks as if they have the weight of the world on their shoulders. Sometimes you talk to people and they have a countenance which is bright and smiling, and others that just seem perpetually in a place of sadness and doom and gloom. The trouble is that when it becomes a pastor that's delivering that up, there's a bit of a problem. And so at one of the theological colleges, the lecturer decided that he would say to his students who were getting ready to go out and to be pastors, he said, "Can I just say to you, you really do need to make your face look like the subject you're dealing with. Your facial expressions," he said, "should harmonise with the speech that you are delivering." And he went on to illustrate. He said, "When you speak of heaven, let your face light up and be irradiated with heavenly gleam." I'm thinking, goodness me. "Let your eyes shine with reflected glory." And then he finished off by saying, "When you speak of hell, your everyday face will do." Well, I don't know whether you find it easy to smile or whether you feel you have the weight of the world on your shoulders, but what is true for all of us is that we are living in the last days, and the last days, to be honest, are not always as good as we would like, but they are certainly prophesied as being difficult. The last days, from a biblical point of view, are essentially between the first coming of Jesus and his second coming, which is yet to happen. Incidentally, just so you, none of us are fooled, Jesus made it perfectly clear that in fact the second coming is not known by him, it's not known by the angels, it's only known by Father. So I do struggle a little bit when someone gives me a date. But the truth of the matter is that we do know that he is coming again. There are 300 references in the New Testament that he's coming again. And yet, we know from scriptures and experience that these last days are full of not only good things, let's not lose sight of that, but they do have their difficulties. Jesus tells us of what must happen before he would come. Encourage us to note the signs. Paul in Thessalonians speaks about it. He talks slightly differently here, but he mentions it in verse 1. John the Apostle in Revelation, which is based as well on many Old Testament prophecies. We're in no doubt that this life will have its joys, but we are under the problems of an enemy who is seeking to take people away from the faith. And most of the time, he does it either by natural disaster or personal or family tragedy and illness. Taking people away from the faith. Prophetic words, of course, mainly speak about physical things, earthquakes, climatic conditions, wars and battles. People say the Bible's irrelevant, and yet actually it speaks about most of the things that are current in our global scientists' agenda. In fact, I don't know whether you read, but we didn't really experience it over here, but most of the west side of the British Isles experienced an earthquake a few days ago. From Cornwall to Blackpool and right across Wales, they felt the shudder. It was registered at 6 on the scale. It started out in the sea. In the last days, there will be many earthquakes, perhaps in places where we don't expect there to be. Why? Because just as our bodies are decaying, so the globe, our world, is decaying. There will be a new heaven and a new earth, but that's what we experience. So what can we learn from this passage? I think we can be reminded that we live in days where people's attitudes and actions can be less than God would want. They are selfish. So the first point really that I want to mention is that we all have responsibility in our actions and our attitudes, but how do we go about it? In the first four verses that Lynn read to us, there was this list of all the various things. And if you're like me, you could spot them. I recognise that. That's the kind of things that we see in our world. Up until recently, I had a little sign in my office, a little saying that was to remind me of important things. It says this: God gives us people to love and things to use. Not people to use and things to love. I'll say it again. God gives us people to love and things to use. Not people to use and things to love. My feeling is that we live in days where we see a lot of using of people. A lot of using of people and abusing of people. And yet the acquisition of many, many things seems to be no less of a desire, even though people realise that probably the best thing about getting something, something material, is you get more joy usually before you get it than when you do get it. The anticipation of it can often be the driver when it actually arrives. And that's because we are really subject to the wonders of marketing and packaging and advertising. But that's the way it goes. And what it really boils down to is that we've become more in love with self than we have been in love with God. It's good in our worship services just to be reminded of his love for us and by his Spirit to respond in love to him. But most of the time we are quite self-centered. I love the song, Jesus, Lover of My Soul. This is what it says in the chorus. It's all about you, Jesus, and all this is for you, for your glory and your fame. It's not about me, as if you should do things my way. You alone are God, and I surrender to your ways. If that was being written by someone who was not a Christian in the world, it may go like this. It's all about me, Jesus, and all this is for me, for my glory and my fame. And it's certainly not about you, for I will do things my way. Although you are God, I won't surrender to your way. I think if you're honest, you will know of people like that, which is great, which is a great sadness. And yet we want to be able to say, if only you knew that actually those things that you are acquiring, those things that you are seeking, those people that you're discarding because somehow you feel it's better, with God, they change. They change. I've seen relationships change because they've looked to him to help them. I've seen people approaching difficult things that are genuinely difficult, but they're different because of a different attitude to them. Many, many times that he works that out in us. And you know where we get these values from? Well, I enjoy a film. I certainly enjoy the TV, and I certainly appreciate sometimes just relaxing and watching various things. But I try and avoid the soaps now. I used to watch them early on, and I just find they depress me. It's because today's moral boundary that's been broken through the soap, which might well get, wow, yesterday, it just disappears and a new level comes in today. I used to say, sort of, yesterday's problem is something we smile at today. In other words, we just become people that adjust. We adjust to it. And yet sometimes God says, that isn't the way I want for you. That isn't the way I see your life. Because children's lives are still being broken. And there's a new generation of insecurity and brokenness. And Satan does his best to do that because he doesn't care about us, whereas God does. Remember a father saying to his son, I'm a self-made man, boasting of his achievements, to which the son replied, that's what I like about you, Dad, you'll accept all the blame. The second thing that Paul talks about, once he's gone through this list of attitudes and actions, is that he warns that appearances can be deceptive. Now, if you can't quite see this picture, it's one of my favourites, really, because if you're not sure what that pointy thing, which is orange, it's a carrot. Okay, it's a really good carrot. If you don't like carrots, this is not going to work for you. But it's a really good carrot. But if you notice at ground level, there isn't very much green. The picture to next to it is one where there's a lot of greenery on the top, but you can barely see the carrots. And it's a great picture of saying appearances can be deceptive. We can assume that there is something solid, something real, because of what we are seeing on the outside. I tell you, it's very interesting, really, that if ever you get tradespeople to do jobs in your home, that there are some that do a really good job. They tell you what they're going to do, and they do it. But there seems to be more and more that tell you what they're going to do, and actually it doesn't come close to what they said. And appearances can be deceiving. They can turn up with a website and a card, and you think, wow, this is really good. It's going to be a good job. My son, who's worked for companies with graphic arts and websites, he said, anybody rubbish can make a website. He said, you don't go by the website. Go by the people who've had the person. Ask them, when my plumber came to do a job at the house we're moving to, he gave the game away. He said, that house there, I've put all new boilers in all of those. He knew, didn't he? All I've got to do is knock on three doors. That's the way to do it. That's the way to sell your services, isn't it? The proof of the pudding is in the eating. And I think the Apostle Paul says, be aware of words and appearances. He says, there's those that have a form of religion but deny the power of it. Paying lip service to faith but live in the flesh. It's called being a carnal Christian. It's being associated with the things of faith, but what we say and do is exactly the same as the world does. And sometimes you begin to say, what work of the Spirit has been in that person? I believe in the gifts of the Spirit, and I have seen God doing some amazing things. But I've also seen people that have a lack of the fruit of the Spirit. I don't think it's about what we know. It's about what fruit comes out. And I've seen Spirit-filled Christians that love and really do live His way. And I've seen Christians, they are Christians, but somehow they haven't made the transition from the attitudes and actions and everything else of the world. And Paul would be saying to Timothy, do not be sucked in because it's popular, but but live through me. Religion is man-made. Christianity is God-made. Religion is man-made. Christianity is God-made. And although it receives jokes from church people, although it receives the joke from the outsider, Jesus said, you must. He didn't say, see if you can be born again. He said, you must be born again. You must allow me to do in you what needs to happen for you to be a new creation. The old has passed, the new has come. We must say, I believe in you, Jesus. I thank you for what you've done. Now do a work in me. I want to receive, not just believe. I want to receive you into my life, that I am a new person. I want to be wholehearted. I want to be wholehearted. There was a medical student who was shocked to find that he'd failed radiology. And he went to his tutor and he said, why have I failed radiology? The professor said to him, you remember when I asked you to take your own X-ray? Yes, said the student. Well, you took a good picture of your lungs, stomach and liver. So why did you fail me? Because you didn't put your heart in it. Well, it's a groan, isn't it? But it makes a point. Did you put your heart in it? Are we putting our heart into it? Or is something else the distraction? Verses 6 to 9, he then goes to say, and also, don't be fooled by supposedly Christian teachers. There are some that are after their own ends, perhaps their own position, or money, or even something else. And I want to apologise here to the ladies. Because if you took seriously what was being read, it gets to that point in the account where it says, and be aware of these ladies that are so overwhelmed with sins. And they go here and here. And I thought to myself, you know, just it doesn't fit, does it, 21st century? Well, I just want to quickly tell you, in the first century, ladies were not given the opportunity. They weren't given the opportunity to learn. They weren't given the opportunity in positions and things like that. Well, probably one or two exceptions. But in the main, they were not given those opportunities. And so they didn't know very much at that time. They were probably good at other things. But in the area of understanding the faith and so on, it was more or less left to the men. Also, the problem is that what Paul is talking about is deceptive men, as it were, worming their way into the ladies because of a number of reasons. One, they find it difficult to argue. They can be taken in by what these men say. Secondly, they could be people for whom they are made to feel that they're worthless and useless and full of sin, because that was a little bit about how it went at the time. And then if someone like a man shows them attention and starts to build them up and make them feel, you know, oh, I'm special, I am worthy of something, I can be drawn into that. And then the next thing is, they're saying to these women, well, if you just pay this, or if you just do that for me, favours, you see, well, then there's a salvation in that. Because it doesn't quite fit our 21st century bill. But I'll tell you what it does fit. It fits the fact that today there are still cults and there are still people purporting to be Christians, Christian leaders, that are taking quite a bit of money from people who believe that they've got the key to happiness. I have nothing to do with them. So I hope I've managed to put myself right back with the ladies again after reading all about weak-willed women full of sin. Men, we stand together. All have fallen short of the glory of God. And it finishes, of course, by saying, and these people are like Jones and Jambres. If you didn't know who they were, well, there's no other reference to these two men in the Bible, but there is an external reference that we find in Jewish writing, which speaks of Jans and Jambres as the two magicians in Pharaoh's day when Moses, with his staff, was performing miracles with the purpose of convincing Pharaoh to let the people go out of Egypt. That's what it was about. And so they were trying to copy the miracles that were being done. And they did the first two to say, oh, anyone can do this, until it came to the plague of gnats, which was like gnats coming out of the dust, and they couldn't do that one. And that began to cause Pharaoh to think. Even they, the magicians, said, this is of God. Made the big change. Why? Because it was life out of death. Life out of death. That's what God's about. Life out of death. Wonderful. So if you want to know who these Jans and Jambres are, that's where that comes from. And I just want to say that although Paul says of people who are behaving badly, have nothing to do with them, in history, sadly, the Christian church took that verse wholeheartedly and it was come apart and be separate. So Christians separated from non-Christians, if you like. And that was not what we were supposed to be doing, but that's what happened. I think, thankfully, that's changed now. Actually, what was really being said is, don't adopt those attitudes. That's not what you're about. But you have a responsibility, as God leads, to share the gospel with people. God is not wishing that any should perish. He has a love for these people. He has a love for people who are perhaps lost and just go away, or go along with the crowd. He has a love for them, and he gives us the responsibility to share with them. So come apart and be separate doesn't really mean the people. It really means don't take on board their attitudes. But how easy it is to do that. How easy it is not to stand apart. So what is the right approach? And with this I close. I was thinking about it quite a bit, and I realised Ephesians 6 is probably our best response or our best approach. Paul says, be strong in the Lord and his mighty power. Put on the full armour of God, so that you can take your stand against the devil's schemes, against the authorities, against the powers of this dark world, against the spiritual forces in the heavenly realms. Put on the full armour of God. And it lists all the various things. And it finishes up, and pray in the Spirit on all occasions, with all kinds of prayers and requests. With this in mind, be alert. Pray for God's people. My dear friends, we combat this approach by God's word and prayer and the work of his Spirit. And I pray that we'll be a people that are people who do that. And therefore we will be able to stand in a changing world in the last days. Amen.